Danny.
This is Ryan Johnson interviewing Mr. Price Davis on this beautiful Friday morning on March 19th, 2004. And my first question for you, Mr. Davis, is what are your fondest memories of growing up in Brooklyn?
No, I grew up in Cherry.
In Cherry?
In Cherry. I could almost look into Brooklyn, but that's in Cherry. Mm-hmm. And my finest moments was, to be honest, is getting that high school diploma and going to high school and getting that high school diploma.
Was your whole family there for your graduation?
My whole family was there for my graduation. My daddy wanted me to go to Johnson C. Smith because he was an alumnus of Johnson C. Smith and Livingston College. My daddy went to both. And I was ready to leave Charlotte. I didn't see any future here in Charlotte for me. So I was ready to leave it. And, by 1939, they begin to ask you if you have a high school diploma. That diploma, when you got any kind of job, I'm not talking about cutting yards and things like that, but if you got most any kind of job, that's the first thing they want to ask you, even if it was just driving a truck, even the truck that I drove for a paint company here in Charlotte, they wanted to know, when are you graduating? Are you going to get that high school diploma? People begin to ask you that when you go and apply for a job. You must know how to read and write. That was about it. And having a lot of good friends here in Charlotte. Growing up with a lot of high school and elementary school classmates. Life was different from what it is today. Friends were really true friends. I mean, you were like a family. All the kids at school, you were like a family. Teachers, you were like a family. And but like I say, I wanted to leave Charlotte. I figured there was something a little bit better for me someplace else. And I tried to have that diploma in my hand so when I walk in and apply for a job wherever I was going, I could say, yes, I have that diploma.
Was that one of the things that sort of influenced you to move out of Cherry and go up to New York?
What is that? But that diploma?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. The minute I got that diploma, I knew that I was going to leave Charlotte. I knew I was going to leave Charlotte. I just knew I was going to leave Charlotte.
Did most of your friends live in Brooklyn? Did you have a lot of friends?
I had not too many friends in Brooklyn. All my friends mostly lived in Cherry or either out here in Biddleville. I had a lot of friends that lived out here. But friends in Brooklyn, no. I didn't have too many friends in Brooklyn because not too good a feeling between the kids in Brooklyn and the kids in Cherry. Hmm. Now, it wasn't gang wars like what they have now, gangs like what they have now. But don't come in my territory. It was that kind of a thing. And even going to Second Ward, I had no fear of going through Brooklyn during the daytime, but at nighttime, it did cause a little problem. It did cause the problem. If you wanted to go to Second Ward at night to see a play that the school produced, or go to a football game at night or something like that, or some kind of program at night in school, when you got out, you thought twice before you went down to Brooklyn, what we call Blue Heaven, Brooklyn, going back to Cherry, because the boys would throw rocks at you and run you. They didn't try to hurt you or kill you or nothing like that, like these gangs out here nowadays. But they would throw rocks at you and run you, and we laugh about it now. When I run up on a lot of, they come to what they call the Wednesday morning breakfast. This is old-timers that meet every Wednesday morning at a restaurant, and it's about 40 of them. We sit down, have breakfast, and laugh about old times and laugh about Brooklyn and Cherry having this rivalry between them.
Was it big in sports, too, with the high schools?
In high school. Oh, God. If Second Ward was around now and you had Second Ward and West Charlotte to meet in a football game, they would run the stadium over. They'd even fill up the stadium downtown here. That was some kind of rivalry. That was a rivalry. And I remember the first game that was played between Second Ward and West Charlotte in the Memorial Stadium. Not not the big stadium here, but Memorial Day at Park Center. And I remember that first game that was played there, and it was well attended. God, it was that was something different, because we had most of the games were played were up to, I don't want to make it sound bad, but most of the games between the teams here in Charlotte were not played on good ground, you know. But the Memorial Stadium was immaculate. It was something different. And I remember that first game. I think Sexton would win that first game. From then on, it was a rivalry.
Can you tell me about some of the businesses that were near your neighborhood or in Brooklyn?
Brooklyn had, in the black neighborhood, you had everything that you wanted to find right there in the black neighborhood. You had theaters, that's the one, you had two theaters there. You had grocery stores, you had funeral homes, you had Lawyer Bowser's office, you had doctors, you had funeral homes, you had the library, all of these places were entwined right there in that Brooklyn neighborhood. And Brooklyn wasn't all slums. It was, you had some streets there that people had beautiful homes on those streets. Yeah.
Was there a business district where they all clumped together?
I like to refer to it as the block. That was Second Street. Mm-hmm. That was where you found your cafes and that was the place to go see and to be seen. To go to what I call not only I call it the block, but a lot of people refer to it as the block. I'll see you on the block tonight. And the block, the best I can describe it is like the boardwalk of Coney Island. That's where you went at night and you'd go there. Now, my daddy, we always did have a nice car when cars became available, you know. And we'd have a nice car, and there's nothing like going, sitting, parking on Second Street and just watch people walk, watch people come and go and whatnot like that. And sooner or later, you're going to see everybody that you want to see. They're going to pass through Second Street.
It's so, very busy at night.
Very busy at night, starting right around dusk until around 2 o'clock in the night, 1 or 2 o'clock in the night. Maybe on the weekends, it was busy all night long, Friday nights and Saturday nights. That was where the action was.
Were there any popular blues clubs or jazz music clubs?
You had one place there that I like to refer to as, the clubs were mostly on this side of town, but there was one place there called Green Willow Garden, where you could go back in the back and you were sitting outside. And that was a nice, popular place to go. But now the cafes, you had some cafes there that were, they were really first class. They were just greasy, little greasy spoons. They were really first class cafes with a waiter with a towel over his arm and whatnot.
What was it like attending schools, you know, in this area? Was it different in terms of where you went to elementary school?
For me, now I went to school. I'd be in my daddy's room. That was crampy because you know how kids are, and we call my daddy Old Baldy because he kept his hair cut real short. And I'm going right along with the rest of the kids. Here comes Old Baldy and whatnot. But my daddy was a very loving person, and I came from a family. But not only my family, but all families back then were like the Cosbys. We didn't have the money, but in the evening you went to the table and you sat down and you ate dinner and your parents asked you, how was your day today? What did you do in school? Let me see what you're doing and whatnot. Things were different then. Nowadays, parent comes in, throws the kid $10, tell him to go to McDonald's or Hardee's and get you something. We didn't do that. We came in around 5 o'clock in the evening. We would come in and sit down and have dinner around the table, 10, 12, 8 or 9, 10 of us, how many? But I forgot the question you asked me.
How was the school?
When I went to Morgan School, which was an elementary school in Cherry, that's when I really began to come of age, like 8, 9 years old, and really take note of what's happening around you. But the school, the Morgan School, the teachers were just like your mother. They you couldn't ask for better teachers. Teachers took time with you. We had no such thing as special ed this, and you got to be in this class and that. You got your lessons, and you kept up with the class. And then when I finished elementary school and started the Second Ward High School, I thought, there's a tape out here that we have called The Colored School, and I make a statement in that on that film that going to Second Ward was the second best thing to go to heaven as far as I was concerned. And it was. When I went to Second Ward, there was nothing like walking through those halls of Second Ward. It just became different. I began to mature to an age wherein I understood politics. I understood a little bit of the business world. I always was interested in politics. I just listened to it and listened to my father and some of the others sit and talk about politics. And when they talked about politics and things, I used to look at them and shake my head. But they were people before their time. I guess as people say, before their time, because things that they talked about then have finally come true now.
Do you remember any of your teachers?
I remember most all of my teachers, all of them. They're all dead now. I can't recall any of them. But I remember my teachers, women and men. And my teachers were like my parents. I could go to them and I could talk to them about anything. I mean anything. And if you got behind in your work at school and whatnot and you weren't keeping up with the class, your teachers would go to your house and sit down and talk to your parents. They either send for your parents to come in, and your parents took time and went in and they would talk to the teacher and whatnot, and you could get it straightened out. And
were there any teachers that had special influence on you that you remember?
Yes, there was Mr. Diamond in French. He had a big influence on me because I was not doing too well in his class, and I finished the 11th grade. That was the last 11th grade year in North Carolina. And he called me in and told me, if you don't improve a little bit, you're not going to graduate. And he helped me to get myself together so that I could graduate in 1939 with my class. And there was Mr. Farmer, and especially another teacher named Mr. Wiley. And even Mr. Wiley would come to New York most every year, even after I was in New York working. Mr. Wiley, and some of the other teachers too, but Mr. Wiley would come to New York, and he was always interested in how I was doing. When he'd come to New York, he would look me up, he'd find out from my parents, is he still staying at the same place? Yes, he's still living at the same place. Okay, I'll see him when I get there. And Mr. Wiley would always talk to me because things were bad back then. And I don't like to make you think that, well, let me put it like this. I don't want you to think that all white people were bad. You wouldn't. That's wrong. A lot of people put it out here, white people beating blacks down and this and that. No. There were some white people out here, even policemen. I know two policemen out there. And I found out later, this one of these policemen, I'm talking about the white policemen now, one of them was a Bible student going to some Bible college or something, but he was working on the police force. But he was such a nice person. When he'd see you, he'd stop and talk to you. He wasn't like the others. He would stop and talk to you. How you doing in school? This and that. Maybe he picked up a ball somewhere, or found a ball or something. He'd give you a baseball bat. And then when you get ready to leave, he'd tap you on the shoulder and tell you, stay out of the street now. Ride your bicycle on the sidewalk. Don't get in the street or something like that. But getting back to the teachers, I believe Mr. Wiley had more of an influence on me than any of the others. Because he always told me, whatever you do, be the best at what you do. And that's what I tried to do.
Which sort of jumping from schools to churches, where did you attend church?
Here in Charlotte, I attended Myers Tabernacle AME Zion Church, and that is the church, it's still there. That's where I'm still going to that church. When I retired, I came back to my church, and I served as chairman of the trustee board there for around 27 years. And I haven't been too long, told them I couldn't go any further because age began to take its toll on me. I served as chairman of the trustee board on a lot of boards, and sung on the choir. I love to sing, and I'm still in that church, and I don't intend to go anywhere. Even my father, when he got too old, he would come and he would sit in the pulpit at that church when he got too old where he couldn't pastor a church.
Where did your father preach?
All over. See, I'm what you call AME Zion. And back then, they did not let you stay at a church. A pastor didn't stay at a church but a year. And at the end of the year, you go to what they call the annual conference. And the bishop would always tell him, bring your suitcase with you when you come. And I remember my mother crying because she knew that we were going to be moved somewhere. And they would move us. And my daddy would have to go someplace else and pastor another church and sometime try to get a school. Back then, I don't know what it meant, but I used to hear them say, I'm going to bid on this school and I'm going to bid on this school to get a job. I think you had to apply for a job at a school most, you know, every year, I guess. I guess they gave them a 1-year contract or something like that. I don't know. But I was too young to understand. But I remember that my daddy always was looking to get himself a school. Wherever he moved to, he would, it might not be the principal, but he would get a school. And back then, schools were 3- and 4-room schoolhouses. They weren't big schools, you know. And but he would get him a school. And a lot of times my mother wouldn't get a school, but my dad would get a school and he would teach and preach.
Did you go to Sunday school at the same church?
Yeah, went to Sunday school, same church. And even when I was in New York, when I would come home, I would always find time to go to my church. Always find time, sometime get up on Sunday and go to my church on Sunday morning, knowing good and well, before Monday morning, before the day, I gotta be back at work, and I'd leave church and hit the road and go back to New York and be there in time to go to work.
Were there any particular
time?
Sure. Were there any particular preachers that you remember at your church that were special to you?
Well, this last pastor we had, which was, he stayed there for 28 years. Now, it's different now in the AME Zion Church. You've got some pastors out there been pastoring in the same church for 40 years. But I go back to the old time. There was a woman minister. Now, she was an evangelist that baptized me. In the AME Zion Church, we have sprinkling and whatnot like that. But she took us down to the Baptist Church. And my father was one of those believers that you must be immersed in water. And she took us down to the Baptist Church, Reverend B. McGregor Jones, and took us down to this Baptist Church and put us under the water. I remember that. And she had a big effect on my life, too.
Were there other neighborhoods in Charlotte that you visited besides Brooklyn and Cherry?
No.
Just about those two.
That's just about those two. That was about the only ones. Yeah, that was the only ones. And that's it.
Was there any reason? That's just the way it was.
Brooklyn and Cherry, and here in Biddleville, and Greer. We call it Greertown. They call it Greer Heights now. Those were the only black neighborhoods, mostly in Charlotte. Those were the major, three or four black, and Greenville. I don't want to leave Greenville out. Those were the major black neighborhoods in Charlotte. Mm-hmm.
How would you define Brooklyn's boundaries with the streets? Because
Brooklyn, I would say Brevard Street, 4th Street, Moorhead Street, and McDowell Street. I think that goes all the way around it. That would sort of take it in. Okay.
Can you tell me a little bit about the Blue Haven neighborhood? What you remember?
I remember it was where you had the shotgun houses. That's what I remember. I don't know the boundary of the Blue Haven section. We call it Blue Haven. And I don't know the boundaries of it, but I always looked at it as being the shotgun house section. And that was about it.
Were those houses rented out?
Rented. Those houses were rented. I'm not sure, but I think they ran about $1.25 a week or something like that. Yeah, you can look right straight through them, and I don't know whether they even had running water in them or not. I don't think they did, but they might have now. I don't want to say that because I don't know. I never lived in one because we always did own our own home. And that was one thing about my family also. My daddy, he always would try to own a home, and that's what started. He always preached that to me, even in New York. First thing I did, get me some money and buy myself a home. And when we first moved to Charlotte, we moved to Charlotte from right up here at Davidson. And when we moved to Charlotte, that's when my father began to get up in age then, and he sort of slowed it down. But a lot of people may not believe this, but I lived right there off of on Providence Road. Providence Road. Do you know anything about Providence Road?
Yes.
Providence Road was just being built. They hadn't finished it. And I lived right off of Providence Road, right about two or three blocks off of Providence Road. That's where we moved to. And we stayed there, I guess, maybe 2 or 3 years. And there was another black family that lived over a little bit further over. And then there was another black family that lived about a mile on down Providence Road. Not right on Providence Road, but a little bit off of Providence Road. And I walked from Providence Road to Cherry to school every morning. Get up and walk. We didn't have buses for blacks back then. And I'd get up in there, we didn't have to get up at 7 o'clock and walk to school. Walked to my Morgan School in Cherry. And finally, my daddy bought a house. And I never will forget it, we still own the house. This doctor owned this house, Dr. Carter. And Dr. Carter wanted to sell this house, he and his wife. And they sold this house, and the house was just about new. And they sold this house to us for $1,800, I remember this. $1,800 is what that house cost then. Hmm. And I remember my daddy trying to raise $100. $100 was a lot of money. See, you're just coming out of the depression. And finally my daddy got this $100 up. I mean, he might have had $75 to start with, but he needed $100 to pay down on this house. And he finally got this $100 and went and bought this house. I never will forget that.
Did you used to know anybody from the Blue Haven neighborhood?
Some of my schoolmates. I think all of them are dead now that I know of. I don't think any of them are living. Uh-huh. Yeah, I knew. And believe it or not, just because it was I guess a lot of people would refer to it as a slum, but a lot of good people came out of there. I mean, you had people that go on from Blue Haven and became doctors, lawyers. You had some, you know, just because they lived in that slum, it didn't mean that they were not going anywhere. And they got out of there and they bettered themselves.
Now, when the urban renewal started to take place in Brooklyn, do you think the people had a real voice in that?
No. They didn't have a voice in it because I was home when it first started, and I can't think of this fellow's name that was head of, I don't say he was head of it, but he was involved in it. And they didn't have any say. No, they didn't know. They didn't have any say because they said that when they tore down all the churches and whatnot, they're not going to build no more churches. Now you got Priest Baptist churches still down there. But that's where all you, that's where a lot of your churches were. Your black churches were right there. Brooklyn, and there in Blue Heaven. That's where a lot of them started out. Now they've spread it out there. Urban Renewal spread them out.
Did the congregation stay together?
Yeah, congregation stayed together, sure. Yeah, congregation stayed together.
So you should believe that.
Yeah, and are still together.
Do you remember protests taking place?
I remember a little bit of protest. Because when I came home, the protest had just started. When I came one time, I came on vacation, and the protest had just started. Yeah, I remember some of the protest.
What were your family's feelings about it?
About the protest?
Yeah.
My family knew that something had to change. I am so sorry that my family did not see the change, did not live long enough to see the change, especially my father, because I glorified my father. My mother, I loved my mother like I don't know what, but my father to me was my idol. I just loved my father. And but my father and some of the other stars, I'm getting ready to call names, I don't want to do that. But my father and some of the other people were instrumental in trying to get people to go vote. Please, come on, go down and register to vote. And I remember a lot of people telling them, oh, Reverend Davis, they're going to do what they want to do. My vote ain't going to count. My dad said, your vote will count. Your vote will count. And I remember that one time I got a little bit afraid because my daddy had gone to ask, could they use the courthouse? They had a meeting room at the courthouse. And I remember them giving the okay. I don't know who the mayor was back then.
It was Brookshire.
No, it's long before he's...
Before then?
Oh, you mean during the right. Demonstration. Yeah, that was Stan Brookshire. But this is even before then. I believe it was Shaw. I believe his name was Shaw. That ran to Shaw Tire Company. I believe now, I'm not sure. But I remember that they got the okay that they could go to the courthouse, and quite a few of them showed up at the courthouse and they had discussions and whatnot. And I remember also, well, this is going back. This is when I was right out of high school. I look back on it now, and back in the 30s, late 30s and early 40s, even when I hit New York, communism was the rain. That was the holler then. That was a communist inspired. And I remember going to a meeting on 2nd Street, this block, upstairs at a meeting, and it was quite a few blacks there, but it was mostly white people. And after I left, somebody told me it was a communist meeting. Now, I don't know. I can't say it was. I don't know. But that just sort of disturbed me later in life. I thought about it because...
Was politics very important in the black community?
Politics was the thing. But you see, a lot of people a lot of blacks did not vote. Now, I'm being honest with you, because they had been intimidated by the KKK and others, you know. And you had Senator Bilbo. God, he spewed hatred like Hitler. And you had Senator Bilbo, Senator Strom Thurmond, Senator Eastman, Senator, Lord, there were so many of them, and they spewed this racist hatred and hollered it so loud and whatnot, and got the people all stirred up. People, whoa, you're telling me whatnot. And until a lot of black people were actually afraid to go and vote. They just didn't, they were afraid. And then they were afraid of losing their jobs, for one thing. Jobs were hard to come by, jobs. God, I hope America never goes through another depression like they did, because I remember the depression. And God, I remember millionaires lost. lost everything. You know, out there on the corner trying to sell an apple for 10 cents. That's what I gave everybody else. And, politics was a big thing back then, though, among some people. I remember, I've always tried to figure, one time my daddy ran for something here in Charlotte. And I remember these white ladies coming to my house, my daddy's house, and asking him to run. We were trying to put some blacks in, we were colored back then, trying to put some color in some slots here. And my daddy ran, he didn't win, but he did make a run at it. And I've always wanted to go back and look that up. And I've been down to the Observer and pulled up some papers, which I thought was the year, but it wasn't. So I never did find it. Mm-hmm.
Did other blacks try to attain political power?
They talked about it, but I can't remember any of them running for office. That was a no-no back then. That was a no-no. You had to be careful here because intimidation was a big thing. You either lose your job, get fired, things like that. Mm-hmm. And I knew of a funeral home here in Charlotte where they were very much in politics, and they got to the place they couldn't buy caskets from. They had to go out of town and buy caskets from them, had to ship caskets into them because local casket companies just wouldn't sell them. So you had to be careful.
Did the Brooklyn community have any way of letting the mayor know what was happening, or what was the mayor?
Oh, they complained all the time. They complained all the time.
But they didn't have a good relationship.
You couldn't have a good relationship now, because I got to be careful how I say this. You got to understand the times back then. You got to understand the mood of the city. You got to understand the mood of the country. And that was back when Jim Crow and segregation was the thing then. And you had to be careful what you said or who you said it to or whatnot. You couldn't just get up and say what you want. You get what I mean? Now you can say whatever you want. But back then you couldn't. No, that was a no-no. And the law meant nothing. People's civil rights and whatnot meant nothing. What was that you were going to ask me?
So the mayor's office really...
Oh, yeah. You see, back then, the White Citizens Council, I don't think it had come about then, but you had the KKK, which was very strong, always have been strong.
Very political.
You just had to be careful. You couldn't get out of here. Because otherwise, you're going to lose your job. You're not going to have a job. You had to live. You get what I mean? So it just didn't, that was a no-no. So it was just one of those things.
Now, we talked a little bit the other day about the police, and can you describe sort of the attitude that the police had toward the neighborhood?
Well, let me put it like this, and you can go and try to pull this up if you want, and this is about the late 1930s or either 1940. The policemen were so bad, and now I'm talking about the white policemen, and not all of them were bad. But the policemen were so bad, they hired a new police chief. And this police chief came here and he said, listen, all of this cursing and all of this sickness that you policemen are spewing out here, it's got to stop. You can't do this. You can't. And it was bad. It was, oh God, it was bad, I tell you. And things changed. I say that to say this. I don't know who was in office whenever they first thought about putting these black policemen on there. They weren't called policemen, when they first put them on, they didn't call something like peace officer or something. But whoever made that move to do that, they had to be a strong person. They had to be strong. I'm surprised that it went as well as it did. I'm surprised that it worked out like it did. And in a way, the way they did it, it was good, but in a way they did it, it was bad. Because the way a lot of people looked at it, that when they first got on there, they were no more than something like a crossing guard, because they weren't allowed to care for game or sleep. And you were called something like a peace officer. You weren't a policeman. But all white policemen went bad. I do that because I don't want people and all white policemen were bad. They weren't, because I knew two that were, like I say, one was the Bible student or whatever he was. And that took time to talk to you, and he treat you like you were a human being. And another one was when they first opened up the Park Center out here, the Memorial Stadium, he would come, and I found out later on that he had permission from the office to do this. He would come and say, because he knew we looked like what, we didn't have no money to get in the game, you know, football game. And this would be colleges playing, like Duke and Carolina or whoever. And he'd come, he said, now I'm going to take a walk, and I want four of you to come over the fence. You jump over the fence, don't come to the gate, because you couldn't get to the gate. But they had a special section there for the blacks to sit. And he said, I'm going to take a walk, and I want four of you to come over, and when you get over this fence, I want you to walk to your seat. Don't run, don't act, come up here, walk like you had paid, and come on up there and get you a seat and sit down. And he'd come back, and he'd check and see. And he said, what other four is going? And it'd be maybe be 20, 15 to 20 of us kids out there. And he would let us in. But then you had that segment there, because I worked with one. God, I have to get ready to call his name. He had gone to the second or third grade. And he couldn't read and write, but he got to be a policeman.
Was that common?
That's common practice. Common practice. And you can go back and look this up. This on-the-job training. Come, bring plenty of racism and hatred and brute force. That's all you needed. And let me just go back and say this about going to Second Ward at night and then having to go home, walk down through New Haven. Now, I got to take a chance. I got to decide, do I want to go down through these where these kids live and let them throw rocks at me and run me? Or do I want to walk across Alexander Street, go down 4th Street, see, I'm trying to get to Cherry, go down 4th Street and take a chance on coming in contact with the police? A lot of times I'd rather be run by the boys.
Really that bad?
It was that bad. Oh God, you cruel God. It was just terrible. It was terrible, terrible, terrible. And I knew that people kept going up to the police department complaining and whatnot, and I knew change was gonna come. I knew that they had to change. People couldn't go on living like that. And because once that police stopped you now, he was judge, jury, he just handled it like he wanted to handle it. You automatically, you're guilty and whatnot. But
he could use any physical.
Any physical, and they can beat you. I've been beaten up many a time. But you know something, I don't hold no kind of animosity toward them or whatnot. And this is the God's truth. I looked at Senator Strom Thurmond before he died, and I saw him walking, and the poor fellow looked like a mummy. I prayed for him. I prayed at night just like I prayed for myself. And we have a board of directors here, and this lady always asked me questions. She knows that I'm strictly into black history and politics. And she asked me, if you could sit down and talk to Strom, what would you say? I said, you know, I'd love to sit down and talk to him. I said, because I'd just love to ask him certain questions and talk some politics with him. But Strom was a bad dude when he was out there. He could upset the people, and he knew how to upset the people. And my point is, it was the people like Senator Thurman and Bilbo and those people. Those people made the mood of the country. You get what I mean? People, they upset and inflamed people that maybe had never given racism a thought, had never even entered their mind. But they had a way of just being just like Hitler. And they knew how to upset and inflame people. God. And like I say, I either take a chance on walking down through Blue Heaven to go home, or either I go down 4th Street. And if you go down 4th Street, but now, I tried to get smart, and I did, and it worked pretty good. When I would get ready to go to a play or something in school at night, and knowing good and well when I'm coming out of school, it's going to be around 9 or 10 o'clock at night, it's going to be dark, I would always take my books with me. So when the police stopped me, he would know that I'm leaving school. And whenever they jump out, GD, these black drums, old songs. Where you been? I told them, I've been to school and they had a play and I'm just not going home. Sometimes they wouldn't bother you, but a lot of times they would talk to you. And what they would do, they would talk to you and get you to keep talking until you forget to say sir or yes sir. And when you mess around there and they ask you a question, well, where are you? Home, so and so. Where you live? I live in Cherry. And if you get to say sir, then you probably got beat. And when they get too beaten on you, they say, you learn to talk like you're talking to a white man. I've been through it. I've been through it. I never was so glad to leave Charlotte in all my life.
This happened out in the open?
I mean, you didn't care who it happened in front of. You didn't care who saw it. Yeah, that. But a lot of times it put me in the car and take me back in the alley somewhere and beat me in there. And I'd be scared to tell my daddy, but now my brother, he'd go and tell my daddy. My daddy would go up and my daddy would go up to the police department and tell them, put in a complaint. And they would give me some kind of, because I remember the one time my daddy went up there and I went with him. And they told my daddy, well, that's Sergeant so-and-so. He's getting ready to go to the Army, and he's just a little upset. He was just having a little fun, and that, I tell you, that was the end of it.
Nothing ever came about
it. No, nothing ever came about it. But I'll say that, and then I say this. There's a lot of people out here, now not black people. There's a lot of white people, because I play a lot of golf with white people, white men especially. They'll tell you that they don't believe that the Holocaust happened in Europe. You'd be surprised what man can do to man, what pain man can inflict on man. Do you get what I mean? The more you hurt, the better they feel. So, they say the Holocaust happened. It happened, and I believe it.
So you felt like a prisoner in your own.
Yeah, you're a prisoner. You're a prisoner. Sure, you're a prisoner in your own house, in your own neighborhood, or in your own neighborhood. But it done a lot to me. But you know something? There's nothing you can say to me now to hurt my feelings. Nothing you can say to me to upset me, because I've been through all of it. Just don't bring the brutality. You get what I mean?
Is that what made you ultimately leave?
That's what made me leave. The brutality. I could take the N-word. That meant nothing to me. Because my daddy always told me, son, they're merely trying to put your light out to make his light shine brighter. And I never forgot that. But just don't bring the brutality and beat me because I'm a little bit different from you. That's wrong. That's very wrong. And that's why I had to leave it. I let me out of here. But now, I love it. I saw the change. I started coming back to Charlotte, and I saw the change come. I saw wherein they quit. Let me just put it like this. You see, we're talking about policemen and brutality. White people did look down their nose at policemen. This is back in the 30s and 40s. Because the white policemen that they got, I don't guess Jerry Springer was around. You ever seen the Jerry Springer show?
Yeah.
That's where they came from. And I'm ready to call his name again, but I won't. But I've had a lot, not a lot, but I've had those whites that were in the lower part of the totem pole said that white people looked down on them and they didn't, that made them angry. Do you understand what I'm saying? And Homer, I'll use his first name. His first name is Homer. But Homer was the guy that I worked with. He and I put in window glasses. I drove the paint truck, the truck at the paint company when I was going to school. After school, I'd drive a paint truck. And he and I'd go around and put window glass in storefronts and things like that. And he was one who couldn't read and write. And, but he got to be a policeman. Mm-hmm. But now, when it came to the black policeman, had to be college educated.
Really?
That was the requirement. Yeah. Because I had a brother. He got a letter. He got two letters the same day. One, he could go and be a policeman. That's my youngest brother. He's still living. He could either be a policeman or either he could go into the school system. He went into the school system. My mother and father told him, you ain't being a policeman here.
That was Calvin?
That was my brother Calvin.